Very happy to be here with you today. You know, in many ways, creating beauty is sort of esoteric, maybe sometimes in our minds, not as an essential part of the simple agricultural gardening lifestyle. But, you know, for my personal feeling, I don't know why each of you are here. One question I'd like to answer, we could ask you all, but I'm going to guess it's because God created in you the desire for beauty. And in Ecclesiastes, it says God makes all things beautiful in their time, and that also that he has placed eternity within the heart of man. And so you are created with appreciation from a God who loved beauty and created beauty at the very beginning of the world, and he wants to make all things beautiful, you know, not just landscapes and, you know, our gardens. You know, he wants beautiful relationships, beautiful music, beautiful homes, beautiful lives. And so, you know, it's part of a life of beauty. And I really think that, you know, when you think of all the compelling reasons for there being a creator God, you know, in science, which I'm heavily into, you know, there's all this complexities of the human body and the irreducible complexities you hear about that says, you know, we must have a creator God. But I really think the presence of beauty in the world, the beautiful sights that we see that have been created, that evolutionary thought really has a really tough time, you know, explaining the beauty that we see us around in the world. And I think that's the fingerprint of God in the world. And I think within your own hearts, you have you have that desire to create beauty that came directly from the Creator. Well, I would like to spend a little bit of time talking about these seven steps towards creating beauty. And I, you know, you'll get these seven steps and a few of the questions that I've asked. I think that, you know, the only pictures that we have of the Garden of Eden are artist renditions of what they think it might have looked like. And, you know, this is Nathan Green's viewpoint. You know, he's mixed. If you're into international flora and fauna and so forth, he's mixed South American spoonbills and African lions and a waterfall from Oregon and porpoise. I mean, he's got the whole world there kind of in one picture. And I don't know what it looked like, but I do know that it was very beautiful. And Ellen White says it was exceedingly beautiful, probably beyond anything that various artists would have come up with that the Garden of Eden looks like. And so, you know, this first step towards creativity is something that you don't have to work on because God has put it in your heart, okay? God created us in his image, men and women, with the desire to be creative and to reproduce and to tend what he created and even make it more beautiful. I mean, he actually, Ellen White says, gave us the role of building our homes from the vines of beautiful flowering branches, and he gave us the ability to create our own beautiful space. I mean, he wanted us to do that. So, you know, things that I share with you are not, you know, they're things that might reflect my sense of beauty, but you know, really, when you leave this, it's going to be about creating your sense of what is beautiful and what God has created in your heart, and that starts at the very beginning. But let me read this quote: "As the earth came forth from the hand of the Maker, it was exceedingly beautiful. The surface was diversified with mountains and hills and plains, interspersed with noble rivers and lovely lakes. Graceful shrubs and delicate flowers greeted the eye at every turn. The entire landscape outvied in beauty the decorated grounds of the proudest palace. The angelic host viewed the scene with delight and rejoiced at the wonderful works of God." Isn't that beautiful? Yeah. So that is what God created us into and, you know, created for us to do. I mean, you know, In Genesis 2, I mean, this was the first work of man that God gave man. Most of you would not realize that in Genesis 2, the very next profession that was mentioned in the Bible, and, you know, people are just kind of shocked when I say this, but the very next thing that could be considered a profession on earth was that God said that he caused a deep sleep to fall upon Adam. And so There's the first anesthesiologist right there. And in fact, in Daniel chapter 12, where Daniel talks about there's going to be a time, and then that day Michael shall stand up, and there'll be a time of trouble such as never was from the beginning of the earth. And then he says, and multitudes that sleep in the dust of the earth will be raised, some to righteousness and some to everlasting shame. You know, to me, you know, as an anesthesiologist, I mean, we're not really about putting people to sleep. I mean, people think that's what it's about. You know, people say, "I'll just knock me out." You know, honestly, one of my partners once said to someone that just was flippant, like, you know, just put me to sleep. You know, don't worry about the fact that, you know, I have a 99% stenosis of my coronary artery and I've got a carotid stenosis and, you know, I'm, you know, one heartbeat away from dying. Just put me out. And he said to them, you know, anesthesiology is not about putting people to sleep. It's about waking people up. And, you know, that's what I live in fear of. I mean, much of what I do, you know, after 25,000 times of doing this, I can do very safely and quickly, and almost, you know, I'm thinking about my garden while I'm doing it. But I always live in the fear of waking people up. And, you know, there at the end of the world, what is God going to do? Wake these people up that are in the dust of the earth. You know, dust you were, dust you. So, I mean, it's just an amazing picture. And to me, that's kind of the anesthetic triumph of the ages, you know, waking people up out of the dust of the earth. Here's to me, an important step in creating beauty. Simplicity, you know. I really love simplicity. This is like a pot off my deck. I used to try to like put like 5 or 7 different kinds of plants together and try to get them all to bloom at the same time. You know, now I'm really looking for 2 or 3 things that are harmonious, that blend together, that's just simple and easy. And, you know, this is from this summer, you know, off our deck. And to me, just 2 or 3 things that are very simple. There's my grandson helping me water out of his wading pool. You know, just simple things can be beautiful. They don't require a lot of complexity. And intricacy. So here are some questions. This is on your handout, you know, that I've wanted you to ask yourself in each one of these steps. Can I create a simple yet beautiful landscape? Should I take a minimalistic approach to landscaping and gardening? I love that the younger generation, and many of you in this room, have embraced this idea of minimalism and living a simple life. I mean, I think that is just absolutely wonderful. My daughters and my son-in-laws are really into that. And you know, just don't make life so complicated. And don't accumulate so much stuff, you know. And, you know, I am totally sympathetic to people that have lost their home, like in Paradise and so forth. But We tried to live a really simple lifestyle, and, you know, we didn't get power boats. We got a canoe, and we didn't get downhill skis. We got cross-country skis. But, you know, over 25 years, you just end up accumulating a lot of stuff, even when you're trying to live a simple life. And my wife and I have kind of looked at the valley below us, and we said, you know, boy, wouldn't it be the easiest way of downsizing for just a fire to just come sweeping up this valley? And, you know, we would just start off, and we would be more minimalist. I can tell you, if we were starting over, we'd have a smaller house, and we would have less stuff, and we would, you know, do things more simply. What will the plants that I choose require excessive upkeep? I mean, many of us are not, you know, able to spend, we're not full time out there, you know. I got to try to keep it simple in terms of what can be maintained and what can't be. I think you need to ask yourself that question. And my wife, if she were here, she would say, you know, oh, come on, Rick. Am I careful not to take on more maintenance than I can reasonably can be computed in the amount of time? And she'd say, well, you never do that. So, but I'm trying to help you. And, you know, I think that you do need to really try to not take on more than you are able to maintain and keep appropriate. And that's a real tough thing for us that are, you know, have creative energies that God has put in us, and we always want to do more and more. And, you know, we just kind of extend ourselves into beyond what we're able to keep up. This is a farm only an hour away from here. This is the front yard of a farm. How would you like to be living in this farm at the foot of Mount Adams? My last picture is going to be from near here. And for those of you that are young or old that are looking for a place to, you know, find a homestead, you know, there's still inexpensive land out in this area. And my son-in-law and daughter-in-law are actually already looking for land out there, and it's just gorgeous. But I just want to show you the house. This is a farmhouse. I mean, it's not a simple house necessarily, but their landscaping approach was very simple. You know, they took this catnip, put a big, you know, pile of it there and some simple shrubs along the bottom, and yet it's just so peaceful and so beautiful and so simple and, you know, reasonably little amount of upkeep there. So, you know, that's just an example of simplicity. In Harare, Zimbabwe, in 1899, when the colonial farmers were establishing their foothold in that part of the world, somebody took these jacaranda trees and for 1 mile on either side of the road planted them 60 feet apart. And this is 120 years later of just one planting. And you can drive down that mile. And I mean, if you come to Zimbabwe in September or October, I mean, this is an incredible experience just to drive down this. And my wife, one time, there was a gardener out on the street, and he was busily trying to sweep these all up off the street. And she said, why are you taking those beautiful things off the street? And he looked really worried, and he thought about it, and he said, well, madam, I'm just trying to make room for more of them to come down. But, you know, that's simplicity. Now, this is from Bouchard Gardens. I don't know if many of you have been there. This is the Japanese garden. Have you been there? I mean, we go there often. It's my daughter's favorite place. She went there on her honeymoon. You know, it's just gorgeous. A lot of gardening ideas. Is this simple to you? I mean, is this beautiful to you? To me, this is beautiful. Now, at Bouchard Gardens, just a few hundred feet away from this, they have another waterfall. I want to just show it to you and see what you think. I think it's attractive, you know, but I don't know what happens to you. What did someone say?
Too busy.
It's too much, isn't it? I mean, the components of this are all beautiful things, and yeah, but your eye just kind of jumps from thing to thing, and you know, you don't know where to rest your eye. And, you know, if I had a choice of sitting between in front of one of those waterfalls, which one would it be, you know? Yeah. But I want you to look at something. See down this bottom right-hand corner, I have a picture of that. Is that pretty? All of a sudden, what have you done there?
You've
simplified the scene, right? And, you know, just two things, the coleus and the maidenhair fern, and all of a sudden you've got something that's very peaceful and restful and simple, you know? And look at another section of the wall there, you know? Is that peace to you? I mean, some of you might find that attractive. I mean, it is pretty, and the components of it are beautiful flowers, and individually they're all beautiful, but when you combine them all together, it's just a little too much for me.
Yeah.
Exactly. Nowhere to rest your eye. You just kind of jump from place to place. And so for me, I go, you know, over the years, I've just tried to develop a simpler and simpler approach to landscaping and trying to create beauty in our spaces. This is Bouchard Gardens too. They've recently just taken to combining like two different flowers together, you know, that are complementary. And here's a couple examples. You know, just foliages that just blend together and are simple. And you know, I can go and stand in front of them and just drink it in, literally. You know, and I've tried to take some of these same things to my own garden, where you just take two or three elements and very simply try to combine them together. These are a swallowtail columbine and a barberry bush, golden barberry, that just, they bloom at this, you know, they're bright at the same time. And just looking at that simple scene gives us a lot of pleasure. And, you know, they'll disappear and somewhere else in the garden. It's my wife, Ann, in front of our garden, our front yard going into our house. And, you know, we've used like the catnips that up from mountain and different things that just have complementary yet very simple things. I mean, I've changed the yard since this picture to even make it more simple. And honestly, we're trying to even simplify even more as we go. And the last step, which we'll get to at the end, which is patience. You know, growing a garden and growing the garden of our heart, you know, it's really the work of a lifetime, isn't it? You have to learn from your successes and your failures and change and just keep moving forward towards what your goal is and be willing to move. You know, grasses are very beautiful. This is in our yard, just combining like two or three different colors that are complementary. And This is also in our front yard, you know, just lilies and this Harko Nishiki willow. It doesn't take a lot of complexity, but for me, that's the kind of thing that, you know, makes me feel peaceful and beautiful as I try to simplify things. And that's something that I think you should consider as you're planning for your spaces. In, this is a Diodorus from the Himalayas, actually, where my daughter is. Fern, I like the backdrops of creating just a simple screen of an evergreen. Hemlocks, I think, are a great backdrop. This is a clematis that grows on a fence in our front yard, and every time this comes out, these columbines are in bloom for a few weeks or months, and you know, I just like that simple approach towards minimalistic landscaping, and it's also, we spent some time living in London when my girls were, fifth and sixth grade. I took a course in tropical diseases there because we do a lot of mission work, and 80% of what you see out in the developing world is tropical diseases, you know, malaria and schistosomiasis and HIV and, drug-resistant tuberculosis, all these things. So I took a three-month course, 8 hours a day, just studying tropical diseases, and it's been very valuable to me in mission work. But the British, you know, have been gardening for literally centuries, and I have a few pictures. I didn't put it in here, but, you know, the British, you know, have perfected the cottage garden where they just have all kinds of things that are coming up constantly. And I tried to reproduce that for a number of years after we got back from there. But, you know, it's a very high maintenance thing. And, you know, most of the British have, I mean, a lot of them have professional gardeners that are full-time out in the yard. And, you know, so that complexity comes at a price in terms of, you know, upkeep and that sort of thing. And I think for those of us that can't be full-time, you know, I think we need to simplify. So that's... This is at Bouchard. This I wouldn't put in my yard, but, you know, it's kind of cool, the contrast, very simple contrast of a couple colors. And do you like that? I mean, just two elements, just grass and alliums. And, you know, I mean, I don't think many of us would probably have that much space to do this long border like these people did. But, you know, even a 10-foot of those two things together would just be a very, you know, there'd be the time of year when that came in that you would just really enjoy standing in front of that and drinking in that beauty. So third step is asymmetry. I think in nature, when you look at nature, natural landscape, things are asymmetrical. And, you know, things aren't in precise rows. And, you know, as agriculturalist, you know, I mean, we end up, you know, planting things in straight rows because it's more efficient for machinery and, you know, taking care of and that sort of thing. But when we're trying to create beauty, you know, this is from Bouchard Gardens also, you know, having curves and, you know, asymmetrical things, I think really enhances the natural beauty, because I think, you know, the best that I can tell, that's the way God created, you know, what the Garden of Eden would have looked like. Everything wouldn't be in, you know, rigid rows and that sort of thing. I just included, just because I love some pictures from Colorado where, you know, I grew up. And, you know, if you look at great landscapes, like this is a few miles from where I grew up. This also, the Maroon Bell, some of you know that area. I drove my wife up there to propose to her at this spot, you know, not far from where I grew up. And, you know, but look at the asymmetry there. I mean, that's just something peaceful about seeing asymmetry and, you know, not having, when everything's in straight lines, if one thing gets a little bit off, then all of a sudden it looks bad, you know. But if you already have developed these graceful curves and so forth in your plantings, then, you know, nothing has to be lined up exactly. This is up in Glacier National Park. This is the Tetons, where I took my daughter to the top of that mountain when she was 12 years old, and we, you know, built a great memory doing that. I mean, being in the outdoors and being in our gardens was just like what bonded our family together as they were growing up. So here are some of the questions this will be that I think you should ask yourself. What are the features that make natural landscapes so appealing? Have I used natural appearing groupings of uneven numbers and irregular shapes? So, you know, when you see a plant that you like, you know, you don't, unless it's a specimen, you don't buy one, you don't buy two or four, you buy three or five or seven, so that when you start planting them, it's really hard to put them in these little square configurations. You'll get them more natural so they look more natural. And whenever possible, even though your farming sensibilities say everything got to be in a straight line, use curved planting beds and pathways so the eyes kind of just move easily across the landscape and just, you know, flow from one area of the garden to the other. So this, again, at Bouchard Gardens, if you have an abandoned rock quarry like the Bouchers did and a small fortune, you know, and 60 full-time landscapers, you know, you can create this scene in your backyard. But, you know, there are things that you can see there. I mean, look at the pathways. They're curved. The individual planting beds there of flowers, they're all irregular shapes and flow from one, you know, one to the other. I mean, there's a certain purposeful randomness in the way they designed that I think is very appealing. And this is also from Bouchard, but, you know, see the curve planters. I mean, wouldn't you like to sit down that every morning and read and have your devotions or something like that? And you know, you may be able to create this kind of space, but you can create a small space in your house or homestead that, you know, is peaceful and brings you closer to the Creator. This is a little waterfall that we created in our backyard. And our intent was to make it look like a Northwest Pacific mountain stream. So, you know, it looked natural to us. And we actually, the quarry that we got the stone from put out a competition of people that were using their rocks. And so we entered into this and we actually got $2,000 prize for this waterfall, which covered all the expense of putting it in, which was an unexpected blessing. Just this last week, I decided, because I had never put any winter flowering, these are hellebores that flower here. I mean, these are in bloom here in Portland right now, these white flowers. So I put those in, and again, I bought five of them, and, you know, put them in an irregular shape. And, you know, I don't know what it will look like next year, but I think it will look very natural. And that's what our intent is when we approach things. Fourth step is creating harmony in your garden. And I just love this picture. This is a picture that I got off the internet. And I, you know, I just think, look at the harmony between those shades of blue and the green. And, you know, I mean, I could spend a lot of time sitting in front of that garden and soaking that in, couldn't you? So here are some questions that we want to ask about harmony. How do I create a beautiful harmony between different elements of the landscape? Is there unity of theme and a sense of balance? Are the colors and textures of my plants complementary? Does the theme of my garden blend with regional flora and climate? We get a lot of people moving up here to Oregon from California, and one of the ways you can tell is that some of them plant palm trees in their front yard, and you always know they're from California. And I want to be kind, but they just don't look well here in the Pacific Northwest. You know, to see a, in fact, I took a picture, and my wife and I were walking, and I didn't put it in, but, you know, it was a picture of a guy, and he had a lace leaf maple on one side of his walkway, and he had a palm tree on the other side, and it just really was sad. And I took a picture of it, and he came out, and he was really indignant, you know, like, why was I taking pictures? And I just said, you know, I just enjoying looking at the landscapes and things like that. And, but, you know, things that, and people even come up here and try to grow yucca in the Pacific Northwest, you know, in their yards, and cactus. And, you know, it needs to be things, you know, if I lived in the South, you know, I mean, look at the, which I did for a while, I mean, you know, the dogwood and the redbud and the azaleas and the mountain laurels. I mean, there's ways of incorporating those regionally, you know, appropriate things that just blend into the surroundings that you're at. And, you know, if I lived in California, you know, the desert things, you know, I wouldn't want to try to grow lace leaf maples down there and fight with the heat all summer and have them, you know. So choose regionally appropriate plants. And then think about plants that will feed and attract birds and butterflies and wildlife. I mean, that adds a lot to your home. If, you know, we have swallowtail butterflies all summer fluttering around our place, and we have plantings that are, you know, currants that we plant for the birds, and we have tons of birds around our house and bird baths and so forth. So, you know, those are things that also create a sense of beauty and harmony. This is our Oregon Conference flagship church, or our largest church here in Oregon, that Ann and I attend, and it happens to be contiguous with the hospital grounds up here. And, you know, I see one of my fellow elder, head elders from Oregon, and we moved here about 7 years ago, and, you know, in churches, you know, there's so much drama that goes on in churches, and, you know, if you're an elder, you get part of that, and if you read the internet and you hear about all the stresses in our world, you know, it's just kind of sad. But, you know, I live by the, you know, what Ellen White said is that, you know, feeble and defective as it might be, the church is the one thing that God has, you know, put his, you know, divine credentials on. And, you know, I believe God's church is going to be triumphant. And I think we got to move past, you know, all the little things that are so distracting and so non-missional and so forth. So anyway, when I went to, we moved to this church, and I said, you know, I don't want to, you know, be involved in any drama. I want to do something really simple. So when they asked me what I would like to do, I said, well, I'd like to be on the landscape committee. And I thought, you know, that's got to be the, you know, the nearest to God and, you know, the simplest thing. And so when I got there, I found out within a few weeks that there were two different warring parties on the landscape committee that had year-long feud, and they tried to take me aside and explain to me why this side, you know, this side was wrong, this side was wrong. Well, anyway, I didn't join either side. I decided I was going to stay in the middle. Didn't want to get in a war. So they had decided they wanted to re-landscape the front, and since I was the only neutral party in the landscape committee, they asked if I would draw up a little plan for that, and some of them had been to my house. And so I remembered that picture of simplicity, and so we tried to do this there. I mean, it falls short, and it takes years to develop that harmony garden. But what we did is we took simple elements and tried to repeat them. Like there's three different groups of these verbenas and the salvia and the hebe and so forth and heathers. And our goal is to eventually coalesce them so that there's just kind of a harmonious blend of colors that are simple and easy to take care of. And the whole committee got out in the fall, and we planted this all together as one big happy family, and we've, you know, kept it up. And, you know, that can actually be, you know, I think our churches should be beautiful places that people drive by and see beauty and see God's creative power at work. And, you know, that can be something that you can be involved in. We got a long ways to go before we'll get to this. But, you know, this takes years to develop and patience. But, you know, there's the goal. And that's something that I like to hold out for you, that you try to create harmony in your garden and in your churches too, you know, if you can. Seasonality. Let me just see how we're doing for time. Oh, really running out of time. I'm going to have to pick it up here. You know, create things that are going to be attractive. Spring, I put a lot of the spring stuff in pots because they don't last very long, and then you can kind of move them back somewhere out of the way, you know, when the summer stuff comes on. Sorry, everybody loves that. That's our violets in our front yard, and one of our girls' bunnies, you know, they played with when they were growing up. This was just a week ago. This is a Nandina that gets this red color, which provides, you know, interest during the wintertime when things are pretty drab around here in Oregon. But, you know, you got to have things that create. This is a garden of a Northwest physician, Joyce Cho. Some of you might know her. She's very into naturalistic. She's an ophthalmologist, but she does a lot of lifestyle teaching. And she just has this peaceful little garden in her yard. And I asked her if I could throw a picture of it on here. So have I considered my landscape to be functionality is, I think, really important. You know, Is there a place for my family and guests to navigate, to seat for prayer and meditation, for eating areas, place structures, possibly a fire pit? You know, can I bring beauty into the vegetable and fruit garden? Can I consider pest control and pollination? I'm not going to get into that. But, you know, here's my grandson playing on the same swing that his mother did 30 years ago. And, you know, we incorporated that into our landscape. And, it's been... I love little boys because they like dirt a lot more than my little girls did. And, you know, my grandson is already out in the garden with me this summer playing. And what about creating beauty in your vegetable garden? You know, incorporating flowers like nasturtiums, which, you know, have beautiful pest control issues, but they're also tasty if you've ever had them. We do a lot of salad rolls in our family, and this is my daughter. She made this salad roll that has nasturtiums wrapped up in it. And, you know, that's kind of makes beauty, brings beauty into your eating. You know, you sit there and you kind of enjoy that. And then you take a bite of this. I ate this one myself. And, you know, every bite of nasturtium gives that peppery flavor, you know, natural if you've ever eaten nasturtium. So in our spring, we grow a lot of kale and, you know, violet violas my daughter plays the viola, but violets and pansies. And then look where they end up on the table. My wife made this salad with, you know, kale and sprinkled the edible petals on top. And it creates a sense of beauty, and it brings practicality into your work. And I just found this on the internet. You know, talk about simplicity. I mean, I've always grown my salad, nice little rows of alternating colors of salad greens. But, you know, if I was a market gardener, you know, I would try to have a little place where my customers would see some just the beauty of growing food, you know. I mean, I just find that so beautiful. And I think I'm going to try to reproduce a little section of this in my garden this summer, you know, and see how it goes. And we probably won't eat any lettuce all summer, but we'll enjoy watching it in the garden. So finally, patiently, I'm really at the end here. You know, this is from England, and, you know, it took years to create this little landscape of these golden rain trees built over arches, but look at the beauty of that the patience requires. So, you know, be patient, you know, wait for things to grow. I mean, this little Harko Nishiki right there is this one right here. It was just before my daughter's wedding, you know, and we had this at her wedding, and that was, you know, a fun place to take pictures and so forth. This is out in our vegetable garden. This is in Holland at Kerkengaard, but, you know, there you have harmony, asymmetry, simplicity, you know, all mixed together and something that's very peaceful for the eye. This is kind of that happening in the Southwest Gardens. And this is an English border, you know. They had a straight row there, but look how they made the flowers flow out over the edge so it broke it up into asymmetry and harmonious colors and, you know, fairly simple. I mean, that's, you know, an ambitious garden, but, you know, it incorporates some of these principles that, you know, I think you should think about. This is the Foundations for Farming Test Farm in Harare, Zimbabwe, where they've taken three Christian white farmers they had their farms taken away from them. This is grace. This is an example of grace right here. They decided that they were going to start a ministry teaching black Zimbabweans how to farm. And one of these guys actually went out to his farm that was taken from him and been in his family for generations and taught the new owners that had just driven him out of his property how to farm his farm. And they're doing lessons here, and they've taught one of our workers, actually spent some time with them, and they're out working on our landscape, our garden project there in Harare. Darren Greenfield came with us there in October and helped us kind of launch things and helped explain to our students and staff some of the principles behind why we want to have successful gardens and farms associated with our institutions, and did a wonderful job there. It's my wife and daughter. You know, since I was asked to speak here, I never know who might be sitting here that might, you know, be willing to come. I thought about Alan here and his sister. You know, we went to your presentations in Texas about irrigation, and that's a big need that we have there. You know, if you guys could carve out a few weeks to come over and help our kids, that would be, you know, wonderful. And there may be others of you that have interest that would like to come over and help. Not, you know, there's all kinds of needs there. So this is what I want to tell you. This is my wife, is this little girl at the bottom in the 1960s in New Guinea, where her parents took her as missionaries. And her two sisters, her older sister Mary there, was at agriculture last year, and because her husband's a surgeon, and she had raised a lot of the money for building this orphanage, and we went to Ag with the hopes of, you know, finding some people that might want to help out. And anyway, there they are. Last Sabbath, my wife's middle sister there was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer a week ago. And my wife flew out just immediately to be with her. And they're, you know, praying and working things out to try to figure out how to best take care of her. So, you know, I'd like for you to keep her in your prayers. They're spending time together, the sisters, you know, just praying, trying to find out what the best therapy and approach for her is. But, you know, I know that God makes all things beautiful in their time, right? And there's a purpose for everything. And so we want to encourage you to seek beauty in your lives, in your homes, in your families, in your gardens. And if you ever want to come to the Pacific Northwest and you take one of these sheets here as you're leaving, I have our contact information. You can come stay in our guest house. This is a barn that we, you know, have remodeled with a kitchen and bathroom, and you'd be perfectly private, and you can explore the Northwest from there. If you come here in the summer, it's really some of the most beautiful scenery in the world. I no longer have any daughters to give away to young men, but, you know, there's a lot of beauty up here. And here is, I want to end with this. This is the Houston Valley, which is about an hour and a half from here. Some largest organic pear farm in the world is in this valley. There's still a reasonably priced property there. And so, you know, come explore the Northwest and create beauty in your lives. And I thank you for being with me. I'd like to just maybe end with a prayer for you as you create beauty in your lives. And also, I want you to consider my sister-in-law, Mary, as they're going through this time together. Let's pray together. Dear Father in heaven, I'm grateful that you have set eternity in our hearts, that you have said that all things become beautiful in their time, and that you're able to even create beauty from ashes. I pray for each person that's here as they consider their life and the intent that you have for them, their families, for their careers, and wherever you may guide or lead them. I pray especially for Mary right now, and I know that according to your will and for your glory, you can bring healing to her, and I pray that we will leave her in your hands. I pray, Father, that we would think of the prayer of that you gave us, that let not the wise man glory in his wisdom, let not the rich man glory in his riches, let not the mighty man glory in his might, but let him that glorieth glorify in this, that they know and understand you, the only true God. And I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.